multicultural environments, that you're a very motivated person, that you're determined, that you're willing to make sacrifice for what you want. So you've done all that, and then you need to be really lucky that the right moment in your life, a selection is started, and then you happen to have the profile that people are looking for in that moment. And it doesn't mean that you're the best person in the world, it doesn't mean that the six of us are the best possible people that could be chosen as astronauts, it just means that we were lucky enough to be the kind of people that this selection committee was looking for in that moment.
Okay. Maybe we can take one step back into and look into your previous career. What is your background? You just mentioned background is important, obviously.
Yes, definitely. Well, the two typical backgrounds that astronauts come from are either a scientific or engineering or even medicine career, or a flying career. So pilots, very often military pilots, or even more often military test pilots. And my case is a little bit weird because it's a mixed situation. I have a background in engineering, and then I decided to become a military pilot. So, but it's not that uncommon. Like my colleague Thomas Pesquet is something similar. He was an engineer, worked as an engineer for the French Space Agency for a while, and then became an airline pilot. So those are a little bit the two areas that one can play around to build the curriculum that can give you access to a selection. But the most important thing is obviously is to have fun at it, because then you're probably going to be good at it, and that's
trying to see how many followers she's got, but it's so choked now.
The interesting thing is the public knew about the astronaut selection because this went public, so we announced Europe has six new astronauts. But then for about 2 years there was a relative silence. So we didn't really know what was happening. We knew the astronauts were training. But what does the basic training, I think you call it basic training, what does it look like? What do you for 2 years?
No, it wasn't that long. I mean, our basic training, which was, by the way, the very first time that European astronauts went through a basic training here at the European Astronaut Center, because before that, we were always sent to NASA to do the basic training with the NASA Aspen class. So our basic training was about 15 months, and it included the initial part, which was like going back to school, so a lot of classroom instruction for about 3 months. We had almost full-time classroom instruction in things like biology, physiology, electrical engineering, computer engineering, orbital mechanics, all the different aspects of science and technology that are relevant to spaceflight. Because, you take astronauts from different, or astronaut candidates from different backgrounds, and you need to bring them on some kind of common level on all of those disciplines and make sure that they know a little bit of everything. And then we started training at ESC on the mock-ups of the European components of the space station. So we trained on Columbus, and we trained on the ATV, the automated transport vehicle, and on the heritage payloads on Columbus, so basically the fixed science racks that are on Columbus, so we were trained on those. Big thing was Russian instruction, so actually at the very beginning we alternated a month of theory classroom lecture with a month of Russian training, including for my colleagues a whole month of intensive training in St. Petersburg in February with minus 20 degrees outside, so probably not that fun.
Okay, may I interrupt because it's a nice story. I know you didn't do the training because you're already fluent in Russian, is this more or less correct?
Well, I took my exam before that and it was good enough, and they said, okay, vacation is a good.
But your colleagues actually joined Russian families for 4 weeks, right?
Yes, yes.
They lived with them in St. Petersburg and learned Russian the hard way.
Yes, so they lived in Russian families and they had Russian instruction all day. So, and it has been a really successful program. I mean, all of us have reached a really good level in Russian, which is absolutely enough for an assignment on a Soyuz space flight.
Okay, this is impressive. Yes. So, you went basically, you said yourself, you went back to school, you had a lot of theoretical stuff to learn, and about the practical stuff you mentioned here at EAC. I've seen a video, there's a video on the ESA video portal, which shows the highlights of the astronaut training, and there's stuff which looks fun and incredibly dangerous at the time. Things like like diving or this I don't know the English word for that.
Survival?
Yeah, the survival training. Survival training looked really, really impressive. How did you feel this was it that dangerous as it looked?
No, it didn't. because no danger. And I think ESA invested a lot in it, so they're not willing to risk our lives. They keep us well protected. No, but it was very demanding for sure. I mean, we were outside for about 5 days, four on land and 1 day and 1 night in a survival raft. And, you know, with very little food and with a lot of, you know, things to do, exercises also to do. But we were never left alone without any kind of supervision. I mean, they were, of course, well, first of all, we were supposed to learn skills. So we had people making sure that we were implementing what we had been told in a proper way. And then, you know, of course, no danger involved, but certainly a lot of work and a very demanding program.
Okay. There's one interesting thing, an interesting part of the training going on for some of the new astronauts, which is the cave.
Yes, that's where our buddies, Tim and Ma, are right now. They're somewhere in a cave in Sardinia. And that's what you called actually the practical part of an HBP course. That's human behavior and performance. So a lot of the astronaut training is actually dealing with the technology and technical systems, engineering, stuff like that. But there has been more and more recognition that, especially on long duration flights, the human factor is hugely important in making a mission successful. And so these courses, these HPP courses, are targeted at that, at optimizing the human factor, maximizing the benefits that you get from the human side. So it means taking care of yourself, self-management, stress management, but most importantly, being able to work in a team. So making decisions as a team, communicating in the team, reacting to stress within the team, understanding what the different personalities are and what they need. And this is something that we learned theoretically during basic training. We did a 3-week, partly theoretical, partly practical course, and then the CAVES is the practical implementation. So basically, Tuma and team with a NASA astronaut and a JAXA astronaut are basically spending, I think, 10 days under the Earth in CAVES, and they are given tasks that are supposed to make it hard for them. So creating conflicts within the team, forcing them to make decisions and under stressful situations, so that's a little bit the idea. And of course, we all have to do it, but there's typically two places every time, so you know, I might do CAVES next year.
Okay. Is this something to look forward? Not really. I mean,
sure. Yes, definitely. I mean, there's sort of those things that might be hard when you do it, but once you've done it, you're so happy that you've done them, and they enrich you so much, and they enrich so much the relationship with the people you work there with. That of course you look forward to them.
Okay, and then I understand every astronaut of the class of 2009 will also become a Eurocom. Is this correct?
At some point, yeah. Depending what your, you know, your, for example, Luca Parmitano who flies in 2013, or Alexander Gerst, as you heard today, is going to fly in 2014. They obviously don't have any time in their schedule before their flight to be trained as Eurocom. That's a pretty long training. It takes about a year, and it's
okay.
A demanding job. So it's more targeted to people that will fly later.
Could you just explain in a very few words what Eurocom actually is? Because I think most of the people don't really know what the terms of Eurocom
sure.
are.
Sure. I mean, I don't know too much about it, but basically, you may be familiar with the term CAPCOM. It's a little bit more famous, maybe. The in Mission Control in Houston, the person who talks to the astronauts on orbit. The equivalent of a CAPCOM in Oberpfaffenhofen, where we have the Columbus Control Center, is the Eurocom. So again, it's the person who actually goes on frequency and talks to the guys and girls on the station.
Why is it so important? I mean, what makes this position so unique, and why do they choose astronauts to fulfill this position?
Well, they don't choose only astronauts. I mean, we have full-time Eurocoms that, you know, are like career Eurocoms, let's put it that way. But also a lot of instructors, I mean, astronaut instructors that part of their time devote to that job. So all people that are somehow involved either have been on station, will be on station, train astronauts to go on station. Because the idea is to have people that kind of understand what's going on up there, that kind of can put themselves in that position, understand not only the world, but also the mindset of the person up there. On the one side. On the other side, it's really useful for astronauts to do that job before their flights, because then when you are up there and you talk to people on the ground, you are able to put yourselves in their shoes. And maybe when you have a question and it takes some time to get an answer, you will not be irritated because you know exactly, you know, all the procedures that they have to go through on the ground to give you the answer you're looking for. So it's basically a matter of understanding each other better.
Okay. And now, nowadays, what are you up to? I mean, I think you're not regularly in Cologne, so you're still doing some trainings in the US or in Russia?
Also, me personally, I'm going through a full Soyuz training for the board engineer one. That's a training that takes several months, but typically we split it up in different trips. So I did a 2-month trip in June, July, where I did maybe, I would say, half of the theoretical instruction on the Soyuz systems. So incredibly good training, very, very interesting, very, very intense. And I'll be back there at some point, I guess in November, to continue that. And in between, I'll have a trip to Houston where I will start my training in the NBL, the Neutral Bounce Laboratory, and the American segment of the space station, and to partly at some point the robotics training for the Canadian manipulator, robot manipulator.
Okay. This sounds also like a really busy, busy schedule. So far, thank you. Don't leave us, please. Wait a second.